Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Program, where we reignite your passion, your purpose, and your play. Find us at www.hotpinkyou.com. Take it away, ladies.
Wonderful, wonderful, and happy morning to you all. Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Life Classes. I'm Christy Bemis, and I'm so happy to be with you today. Author, speaker, psychotherapist, and Ignite Your Life coach, and co-founder and now solo owner of Hot Pink University. I invite you to find me on the web at www.hotpinkyou.com or on Facebook at Hot Pink University with Christy Bemis. And today's topic is all about relationships in our midlife with our female friends. And this is such a great topic because right now so many of us are facing such isolation, and we've come off of months and months, if not years, of divisiveness and feeling maybe disconnected from one another. And so I really love this topic, and I'm glad you're here with me today. Make sure you grab a journal and a pen. There's going to be activities today that we are going to be going through and an assessment that we're going to be taking regarding our female friendships and where they're currently at right now. I just want to make sure I post this to Facebook. If you want to join me in person. So women friendships, right? Such an interesting topic. And you would think that by this point, I'm 50, and many of you listening are maybe in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. And so, yes, I talk about midlife, but this is a key takeaway for any of you women in relationships and friendships with other women. I don't know about you, but for me, this has been a hard thing to navigate through my life. I can tell you a little bit about my history today and then moving into adulthood, where I'm currently at, and hopefully by sharing my story that will resonate with some of you. And I'd love to hear back from you. You can email me at hotpinkyou@gmail.com and just hear how this episode touched you. I've been hearing back regarding the various other episodes I've been cutting lately. And it's so great to hear from the audience, like what is resonating for you, what other topics you want to hear. So feel free to reach out to me. We're also going to be doing a couple activities today, a circle of trust activity, and we're going to be doing an activity around what I call handle with care instructions of maybe how you want to be handled in relationships and creating your own handle with care instructions. I'm also going to be sharing with you keys to creating better and more positive and more relationships in your life, as well as sharing with you a list of things I feel like destroy sisterhood and positivity in sisterhood and tear us down. So stay tuned, and I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. I want to start out by sharing my own history with you of female friendships and female relationships. It hasn't always been easy. Right now, I feel like I'm in a very good place. There was another time in the late 1990s, I felt like I was in a really good place with female friendships, and I can tell you why. But growing up, it was a little harder for me. The struggle I had was I was pretty shy and pretty awkward, and found it difficult to speak out and to feel confident. I really relied a lot on my older sister, who was 3 years older, to speak for me. And I remember that very distinctly, times on the playground in grade school, of really looking towards my sister to kind of have my back and speak up for me. And I never quite fit in, you know, in any group. I would see these groups or cliques of girls and really found myself struggling. And in middle school, there was an intense isolation. I early on found a best friend, and by eighth grade, that best friend had been kind of manipulated by one of the more popular girls that I had gone to grade school with, and there was a lot of bullying. I remember showing up to school one day and looking down the hall and seeing all of the contents of my locker across the hall, like all of my personal items, all my books, all my notebooks, folders, everything. Because back then, if people remember lockers, you found somebody and you shared sometimes, you know, and that was the symbolism of we're best friends, right? And so my best friend had kicked me out of her locker and moved this other girl in. And the bullying just became persistent from there. So much so that I ended up in middle school transferring to a private school just to get out of that situation. But even in the private school, really finding myself not quite fitting in until I went to the public school once again my junior year, where I could find a group of people that resonated for me and had good friendships then. And then just an extreme feeling a lot of times in college of isolation. And now this is back in the time that Facebook was not popular, or we didn't have the TikTok or Snapchats and all these like social media outlets that are showing you what people are doing and how they're connecting with each other, which I think leads to even increased feelings with women of more social isolation and more of, oh, if I don't have scenes like that in my life or frames like that in my life with female friendships, there must be something wrong with me. And one of the things that I think is the clarity I gained just in the last couple of years is some of the struggles I was having wasn't a social media concept of what female friendships looked like. But my mother had this group of what she called yayas, women that had been friends since early grade school years and beyond. And I think that's really unique for women to maintain friendships like that. And so there was always this pressure of, I don't have that, and so what's wrong with me? Because it was such a great connection that my mom had with these women throughout the entire course of her life. And still to this day, they get together every summer and connect, you know, into her 70s now. In my adulthood, one of the biggest things I think that happened for me was losing my sister, which was really like losing my best friend. She died of cancer, brain cancer. And in 1998, the best thing I did for myself was intentional sisterhood. I started a book, and really I just started it by sending flyers and requests and starting the date. Looking online at like what other book clubs were out there, or going to the library and looking up, you know, books that talked about book clubs, and really just starting it from there. And that group is still going along with one another as really strong female friendships. I'm not any part of that group right now because I moved 2 hours away, and so it's hard to maintain that monthly, you know, relationship with women. But it was really in its time very healing for me. And I really emphasized in starting that book club, I was really emphasizing the strong desire that we have each other's back and that we don't do the negative things that can happen out of sisterhood by not having each other's backs. And that's super important for me. When I'm working with sisterhood and I work in a lot of sisterhood circles now, that is really valuable to me as direct communication, repair communication, and intentionality with how we want to treat one another. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to move into now, where are you at with your sisterhood? And one of the things Anne and I, my co-founder of Hot Pink University, no longer involved in the actual production of things anymore, but definitely a strong supportive sister. We actually wrote in 2016 and published it, and one of the whole chapters in it is around that sisterhood. And so I wanted to dive into that a little bit. If you're interested in the book itself, it's a book filled with all kinds of things around loving your body, around the power of our narrative and our story, Pleasure 101, the art of receiving, all of these things in 2016 that we wrote about back then are so pertinent today. And a big part of that is sisterhood. So I'm turning to the last parts of the book, we used to call it the vibe of the Hot Pink Tribe. And so there's actually an activity number 22 on page 131, that we talk about fill in the name of a friend that makes you pee your pants with laughter, a friend that touches your soul, a friend that is your constant, a friend that listens deeply, a friend that helps you celebrate, a friend who honors your abundance, a friend who takes personal responsibility for who she is and how she got there and where she's heading next, a friend who is fun, a friend who admires you, a friend you admire back, and a friend you can admit your secrets to with no judgment. And so this activity was really around examining your own sisterhood and really taking kind of a personal assessment of like where I'm at now. So what I want you to do is take a pause, and even if I was reading those off and you're like, boy, I don't have any of those, or I only have one, that's okay. What it is the assessment is actually showing you what's possible and what something you could aim for or achieve if this is important to you. Here's the thing. The power of midlife sisterhood is that we don't feel so isolated. We feel more in connection with people when we have sisterhood. And we have the support that we need throughout our life when we create intentional and powerful sisterhood. And so I think that's more important now than ever before. You know, how can I create this intentional sisterhood? And so here's the activity. You're going to create a series of five circles on a sheet of paper. The inner circle is you. And these are your trust circles, your inner circles, right? And then around that inner circle, you're going to create five more circles around you. The innermost circle that's around you are your people that you spend the most time and energy on in your life. The next circle is people that are not quite in your absolute inner circle of trust, meaning they don't have total and complete access to you. Like the people in my inner circle, they have how the ways to get a hold of me the best, text message or email or, you know, give me a call. Like they get my attention right away. They call, I'm like, I'm on it, right? The people that are in the next peripheral circle, you know, they don't know how to get in touch with me right away, but they're right there. They're right at the cusp. And I'll share a little bit personally what my inner circles kind of look like. And then the third circle is just acquaintances, maybe coworkers, colleagues, people you kind of know that are out there. The fourth circle is one more step removed even. So it's people that you run into. It could be neighbors. It could be, you know, people that are kind of in your life, but there's a guardedness to that circle. And then the fifth circle is the most remote, the most distant, the most disconnected from you, but they're in your circle, they're in your vibe. So one of the things that I think is super important about constructing the inner circle is there has to be an entry point to the fifth circle. And what is that entry point, right? What are your entry points to your most inner circle of trust? And it starts with the fifth circle. So for me, when I moved to a new community, I joined a lot of women's networking groups. My work that I was doing at the time was an entry point for me to come into my circle a bit, right? So there has to be entry points, is my point. If you, and especially during times of isolation that we're facing right now, it's hard to find those entry points. It's hard to find them, but we have to create them. How do we create them? They can be online communities. They can be networking groups that are maybe not meeting in person or maybe meeting distanced right now. In times of non-pandemic times, they can be networking groups. They can be work that we're actually going in person. For me, too, as the older I get, it feels like the harder I get to find those entry points. So I'm always at a growing edge in my life. And growing edges create entry points. So I might take an art class, or I might learn how to play the ukulele. Currently, I'm enrolled in the Somatica training. And so there's entry points for people to come into my circle. And that's one of the key points and key features, is that you have to create it. You have to create some kind of entry points of natural interest that you might have, striking up conversations, but also sharing of yourself. So it has to be this entry point. Although, what I want you to do is fill out the people you care about the most or you care about and value their opinion the most. And what I really want you to evaluate with that absolute inner circle to you in the circle of trust exercise is, are the people that are calling the most attention from you, taking up the most energy, taking up the most mind space, are they truly people that have deserved to be that close to you? And so I want you to really evaluate that. What I found when I did this exercise a while back was I had a lot of people that I felt were in that inner circle or people that were taking up a ton of energy for me. And what I really recognize is they don't call and check up on me. Most of my relationship with them is me initiating or me worrying about what they're thinking. And so I had to remove in my mind and on this sheet of paper a lot of people that I initially thought were in my inner circle. And sometimes that means that you're family. And I know that's hard to hear because we want our family to be in our innermost trusted circle. But sometimes they haven't earned the right or become so toxic that they shouldn't be this close to us. And we need to bump them to the next or even the third level of our circle. So really be evaluating that. Are the people that are in this innermost circle, are they the ones that have your back the most? The second circle, for me, I only have three female friends. I have other people in my life, including my partner and, people that like my mother's in that inner circle. But I only have three female friends that are really truly in that inner circle. The rest of my female friends, I would either put in the second or the third circle. Some of it has to do with geographical proximity to me, and it's just harder to maintain that friendship. But some of it just has to do with they don't know who I am because they really haven't asked or earned the right to those stories in my life. And I think one of the things I find, I don't personally do this, but I think one of the things I find with women I work with is sometimes they overshare, thinking that they're creating this inner circle of trust, and they overshare and set themselves out for vulnerability, disappointment, where they've shared some stories with women that maybe haven't earned that story, and then there's some vulnerability around, oof, I'm not sure I should have shared that, right? Two great resources for this is to watch Brené Brown's videos. The one on empathy versus sympathy is a great one. And there's another one of six women who don't deserve to share your shame story with. And what's interesting is when I reestablished a connection with one of my most inner circle of women, I actually had her watch those two videos with me because I had a shame story that I really desired to share at that time. This was several years ago. And I really desired to share the shame story because it was just weighing me down and I needed a place to put it and I needed somebody to hold space and I needed somebody at that time to validate my experience of what I was having in that moment. And so I watched these two videos with her and I said, can you be that friend? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that of showing friends how to be a friend to you, you know, watching a video together. Joining in on a podcast together and just really saying, this is the kind of friend I desire and need right now. I think there's something beautiful in intentional setting of the tone and relationship.
So those are two possibilities. As you do this trust circle, the other thing that I really want you to do is what I call the handle with care instructions. This is something I learned through the book, Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, where there was an exercise to do in there. And what it had to do with is, what are the characteristics of people with whom you can share your story? And this is super fascinating to me because, like our clothes, have handle with care instructions on this. What I want you to do is, on a next sheet of paper, I want you to write out, what are your handle with care instructions? So what are the key characteristics of the women in your life with whom you can share your story with? I'll share mine. And that will give you a launching point of maybe to connect with something in me, okay? And something that resonates for you. So the key feature for me is, don't talk about other people's stories. Meaning, do you ever hang out with a woman who is like, oh yeah, so-and-so is struggling with their relationship with her partner and here and here and here, and they're sharing like these really detailed pieces of this other person's life permission. To me, that's a key red flag. If I know the ins and outs of your friend's life and I've never met her even, like, no. I want to hear your perspective of how that friendship is impacting you, certainly, or how their choices might be impacting you. But I don't want to hear their story through your mouth. I want to hear their story through their mouth when I've earned the right to hear their story. So overhearing someone talk about someone, for me, is a big red flag for me. And sharing opinions that vary greatly from my own, making a blanket statement, something like all drinking is bad, or anyone who supports X candidate is this and this and their own opinions, much more. Or modulate the conversation that can be open to all opinions. So really strong black and white thinking, I think, is what I'm getting at, are some big red flags for me. I love, there's a marble jar activities that is in the Daring Greatly book. And it was things like, they keep our secrets, friends that have earned the right to that inner circle. They keep our secrets, but they also tell us their own. They know my family. They know who my, you know, what my struggles are. They know what my stresses are. They know who I'm closest to in my family. They ask me the questions like, how are you doing on this topic? You know, how is your mom doing? How is your stepdad doing? How are your kids doing? And they know my stories around that and where my pains are and where my pleasures are. Make sure I'm included in fun things. Even during times where I wasn't in partnership, the friends that reached back towards me and said, we want to hang out with you, even if you're our third wheel right now, we love our third wheel. Come and be our third wheel. Those were the friends that truly are in my innermost circle. They know when I'm sad and they ask me why. And they know when I'm not feeling great. And so they reach out. They also know when I'm celebrating something and how I like to celebrate. I think that's important too, because women don't celebrate enough. And we do a lot of complaining to each other, but we don't do a lot of like letting our girlfriends know when things are going really good with our partners and celebrating that, and even kind of bragging and picking one another up. I think that's super important. And so this marble activity is kind of like, you have a jar, and for each one that you can say, yeah, that's a marble of trust. Eventually, trust is built up one marble at a time. And so I think that's a really great activity to do, is the handle with care, and that's your innermost circle. People that are in the secondary circle, when I look at the list of those women in my life, there's key features to it. One is the relationship is not bi-directional, or they're guarded with me, and then that makes me feel guarded, vice versa. They haven't shared vulnerably with me yet, and that makes me feel guarded. I'm always initiating. That's all. Also, like, you don't get into my inner circle if I'm the one that's always initiating, because that feels, you know, that strikes some of my attachment issues of, like, wanting to feel included. And there's an inconsistency, like, all of a sudden they just pop out of the face of the earth and they're like, hi, here I am. I want to spend all this time with you. But they haven't done, like, the building of trust or keeping that consistent communication going. So the things that destroy sisterhood, those are some of them, but also judging, criticizing, labeling, unresolved repairs that need to be addressed, having tough conversations. I've had this with the women that are in my innermost circle. We've had tough conversations. We've called each other out on some things. Every single person that's in my innermost circle, we've had kind of a come to Jesus talk at some point where we've had to, like, really repair some damage that has been done. So female relationships aren't damage free, but the damage that's done is repaired, that the relationship is important enough to you that you seek the repair in them. And I think that's super important. The other thing that I really, really want to emphasize is we as women can posture or gaslight one another. Gaslighting starts with, I really shouldn't tell you this, but, right, so-and-so said such-and-such, right? Or the pot stirring around, I'm having an emotion about something, and I want you to align with me and feel that emotion so I feel validated. Emotional contagion, I call it. Emotions are contagious, and you know that they're contagious because you walk out of a meeting and you think one way, and then all of a sudden your pot is stirred another way, and somebody's saying, can you believe she said that? And then all of a sudden you're agreeing and saying, yeah, I feel the same way all of a sudden. I thought that meeting was great, but until you mentioned it, now all of a sudden I'm not thinking that meeting is great. There's a great book out there that I go through with young women, but I think it's pertinent for all women across all ages, and it's the Queen Bees and Wannabes, and Wise Men. And it really talks about the various hierarchies and levels and, like, how the Queen Bee gets people kind of buzzing around her. I think it's a super valuable, read. Yeah. So the other pieces around sisterhood are a couple of key points that I kind of want to end our time with is, you have to work on it. Anything worth having takes effort and takes skills. And so there's been a time where a good friend of mine met me for lunch, and she almost ended the relationship with me over not getting back to her via text messaging. And it triggered a lot of emotions around abandonment, but also self-righteousness. Like, I'm a busy person. How dare you ask me to, text you back in a timely manner. Don't you know how busy I am? But here's the thing. She was telling me what her handle with care instructions were, and I had to validate that. Trust your gut. There's a great resource out there, Dodging Energy Vampires by Christiane Northrup, which I really refer to a lot and I think is a super great resource to really fielding out the toxic sisterhood that can so often happen to us. And ending on this note with you, sisterhood is intentional. Write a list of what intentions you want to have in your sisterhood. All manifesting, all creation starts with intention. And so be intentional with your sisterhood. Thanks for joining me today. It's been another great 30 minutes. It's always going so fast to inspire and give you guys knowledge. Find me at www.hotpinkyou.com. Please follow this blog so you get all of the new episodes that are coming up the pike. This month is going to be a bit scattered as I'm traveling quite a bit, and so episodes will be more towards the end of the month, maybe one more episode before I start my travels for the next 20-plus days. It's been great. Thank you so much for your time. I value it. I honor it. And here's to great sisterhood.